If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Hallie, how you doing?
I'm good. Such as we all are. We're recording this on June 18th, which is a Wednesday, and we just had the No Kings protest over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very encouraging to see. Obviously, I'm low-key hoping for an Obama figure to arise. Like, we do need
someone.
I hate that about us as humans, but we do
I know.
Need someone. And I you know, obviously in a more just world, that person maybe AOC, I don't know, I don't think we live in that time. So if anyone has sort of an Obama-like charisma,
yeah,
and wants to step up and you're listening, I hope that you will.
Now's the time.
And now's the time. Better late than never. And yeah, other than that, Allison, I don't know, I'm just taking it day by day. How are you doing?
I'm good. I recovered. We recorded an ad the other day where I was still recovering from having I don't know what, if it's just like a stomach bug. It was just a 24-hour thing, but it knocked me the literal fuck out the other day. I have plenty of medical maladies, but getting stomach sick is not one of them that I tend to deal with very much. And it had been years since I'd been throwing up sick. Boy. My heart goes out to people who that is constantly an issue for, because it was like, I felt like I ran a marathon after it. Like, I slept for a full
so
day.
I'm so sorry.
It was so bad.
I am so sorry. Every time I knock on wood, I feel very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I haven't been sick recently.
As fewer and fewer people are updated on their vaccines, and as fewer people, like, what a good time to mask in public spaces.
Also, yeah, did you vote in the mayoral election yet?
Not yet. I vote on election day, because my polling center is like next door to my building, but my early voting polling center is like a 15-minute walk. And I'm like, well, I'll just vote day of, because it's closer. But I'm very excited.
Yeah, I like voting day of too.
I also like voting day. I don't know. There's something about, like, we're all voting today, which feels like community in some way. But yeah, we are just on the heels of Brad Lander being detained, the city's comptroller and one of the progressive candidates for mayor. I'm sure everybody knows the story at this point by the time this comes out, being detained by ICE just for trying to support a non-public figure who had been detained and arrested by ICE, and trying to help them navigate this absolutely disgusting process. And he's okay now, and I love how much he and his wife have kind of used this to be like, this is happening to so many people. Like, yeah, it's like crazy that such a public figure and such a like known political person could be jailed or arrested rather and detained, but it really just points to how absolutely devastating this is for every single person that has to interact with ICE, and seeing how they're all over New York and LA right now is super scary,
yeah,
and super sad.
And I do appreciate, though, you know, that your governor, Kathy Hochul, I appreciate her going down to get him out. It just sucks where it's like, that's where it's at, yeah, where we're at, where it's like, okay, great. So I guess every time any elected official, like, it's like it has to be this public attempt,
right,
at like, just like, they're just testing everyone's boundaries all the time.
Yes.
So I appreciate all the governors that have said, well, we're not going to do that, or we're going to create some sort of boundary, knowing how fucking putrid these people are,
yeah,
you know. And this is also following the political assassinations,
yes,
in Minnesota, and that, like, Senator Mike Lee was like tweeting essentially memes about, and it's like, these people, conservatives are fucking sick in this country. Republicans are out of their goddamn mind. I don't know how you can look at that and be like, good, I'm glad, this is good, this is how this society should be conducted.
It's really, it is, like, it shouldn't feel shocking anymore, because it's what happens,
yeah,
constantly. And the reaction, like, we know these people are evil and bad, but like, to see just how willing they are to publicly be this cruel is genuinely like a troubling, like it feels very like not only like sad and scary, but it's like it's a very unsettling and like destabilizing. I'm like, oh, so people just don't think other like that anyone else is a person aside from like the people that specifically agree with them. Like that's a very scary place to be when that's the party that's in charge.
And also, I just one other thing about Mike Lee, like him, you know, this other senator, Tina Smith, sort of confronted him and has been like in the press being like, this is insane. Is that Mike Lee is also backing selling off like I believe it's hundreds of thousands of acres of national park for development. And it's like, again, to not be able to see that you are almost like a comical 80s style villain. It's like, I understand, like, I guess even if there was some sort of like religious context, I suppose I could be like, okay, I mean, maybe that's my own internalized homophobia where I'm like, I guess I understand using, like, if you hate gay people because of like the lie that your religion is indoctrinated with you, I do have some empathy.
That comes from like, it came from before you understood thinking, and I understand that like deconstructing that is a ton of work that a lot of people are not willing to do. This is just like evil capitalism.
It is insane. And it's just funny where it's like one of the things we said is they're going to sell off this land for affordable housing. And I was like, who do you, and I guess their followers do believe that, but I'm like, I'm just thinking, like, who do you think reads this, who would be reading this and actually like analyzing it, who thinks for one goddamn second any of you people need affordable housing for anyone? Elon Musk? Like, who's living in the national park? Like, who are you talking about? But I guess that is who they're talking about. Anywho, with that in mind, we're going to find ourselves at a national park in today's episode. It is, of course, vacation month. People wanting to relax, get out of the city, and of course, find themselves under the sway of, unfortunately, a pathological serial killer wasn't on their vacation to-do list. And that movie, of course, is 2005's Wolf Creek. This is like on a list of like, I feel like this is constantly on best horror movie ever's list. I really enjoyed it. It's a very straightforward slasher. Well, not slasher. It's a very straightforward like serial killer movie. It's a co-produced, written and directed by Greg McLean. And we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what did you think about the trailer for Wolf Creek?
I mean, very 2005. Like the most 2005 thing I've ever seen. A wild party, a group going on a trip. It's men and women, and it's kind of sexy, but then it gets really scary. Like weird loner who like has a knife. Are they in Australia? Is that where they are?
Yes. Yeah. So the there's two women. They're British and they're with an Australian. They're traveling across Australia, road trip, going to the national parks, having fun.
I am sure that. The vast wilderness of Australia is stunning and really something to see. You couldn't get me to that country knowing what's going on with those bugs. Like they got so I saw like some TikTok where somebody was like, oh, everybody talks about how like crazy the animals in Australia, like kangaroos, like there's nothing like a kangaroo. And it's like, yeah, those animals all like evolved in isolation as opposed to like so many other animals where like there was more migratory opportunity just because they were near other places, which like does explain why everything in Australia is like from another planet.
Unique New York. Yeah, it is. It has an otherworldly quality, quality, if you will. And it's a lot of like beautiful vistas, a lot of incredible skies, but very, again, millions of acres of mostly flat lands that one could easily get turned around in.
Oh, yeah.
A very intimidating landscape to find yourself in. I was going to say, Allison, we also like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of taking a road trip to a national park?
I like a national park, I guess, in America. Some known,
you're drawing the line,
I guess, just like known stuff. Like I obviously there's a lot of like unknowns out in those national parks and there's all kinds of like creatures and natural, like I know that like hot springs are like cool until they're not and like all of that, but in Australia special, like in an unknown, like I feel like I follow all the national park stuff, so I'm like, oh, don't go near bison, like leave moose alone, like I kind of know the rules. But the element of like driving around where there's not a lot of people, not my favorite thing.
And unfortunately, this is a movie that is loosely inspired by true events.
No.
It's loosely inspired by Arnar, the real life backpacker murderers committed by Ivan Milat in the 90s. He is an Australian serial killer known as the backpacker murderer, unfortunately. He abducted and murdered 2 men and 5 women.
Jesus Christ.
Between
That's a lot
1989.
Of people.
It's a lot of people. In 1989, 1992, he would approach backpackers along the Hume Highway and offer them a ride to, you know, different areas in southern New South Wales. And unfortunately, he would say, drive them to the Belanglo State Forest, where he would murder them, unfortunately. And then there was another backpacker murder that also inspired this. Bradley Murdoch was the name of that serial killer who killed English backpacker Peter Falconio. And he is currently still alive and in prison for that. So it is, again, for me, always scarier if it's true.
Yes, and 100%.
I think in this case, this is very based on reality and a situation that I think like what is scary about this to me is these are not backpacking people. These are city people who have chosen to go on the fun adventure. So when they are out of their depth, they are reliant on the kindness of strangers. The question is, what stranger will you end up meeting out there at Wolf Creek National Park, which of course is the titular national park?
Is that a real one?
Of the movie. Yes, Wolf Creek National Park is real because it is around the Wolf Creek crater,
which
is an actual meteorite impact crater that you see in the film. I don't know why I'm like, I don't know if it's real. It's like, yes, we see it in the film. And it is beautiful and the kind of thing like, yes, you would travel out of your way to go see this gigantic crater.
That isn't anywhere else on Earth. Like, that's like, I get that. I still wouldn't do it, but I get
it. Exactly. But they do, Allison, and well, unfortunately, we find ourselves back again. And also, there is a sequel to this, Wolf Creek 2, so maybe we'll have to watch that one. And before we get going, would you like to guess the gist of Wolf Creek, Allison?
Guess the twist.
I mean, I'm going to guess that this guy, like, that kills them all has done this before, and it's like a very clear trap of like waiting for, like, that he waits for touristy backpackers to come and has like it's like they're, we're gonna find out that they're one of like dozens that he's done the same thing to, like him and his maybe partner.
And then my question to you, do you think we're gonna get out of this sticky wicket alive?
God, I mean, knowing that, like, people were murdered, I hope no. I hope it's like, no, someone survived. Someone survived and was able to, like, go. But I don't know how you get out of the middle of nowhere.
Well, and that's the thing. Watching this, Allison, well, first of all, we wouldn't be there, but ain't no way we're getting out.
No.
But
first to go in almost every circumstance that could exist on the planet.
Right. Maybe if it's like, maybe I could die in a way that would hinder the killer, maybe like buy time for someone else. That seems like a great use of my my one precious life. Hey guys, just popping in to let you know about our July live show, which will be Sunday, July 20th at our regular time of 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And we are doing the one and only Megan 2.0.
Yes, we're ready for a hate watch and it feels like it's going to be one. If you're interested in joining us, please get your tickets at moment.co/ruined. That is moment.co/ruined. And again, if you're a $20 Patreon tier member, you know that those tickets are going to be in your inbox. And if you have an issue, message us through Patreon for that. But we'll have all of our regular stuff. We'll have a drinking game. We'll have the chat. We'll have Hallie hating stuff. It'll be the best.
We can't wait. We will see you there July 20th. Be there or be Megan 2.0. All right, well, let us begin ruining Wolf Creek, Allison. We begin with my favorite thing in all the world. Text on the screen.
We love.
The following is based on actual events. 30,000 people are reported missing in Australia every year. 90% are found within a month. Some are never seen again. We open on the beautiful golden beach at sunset. It's stunning. It is, again, like, as soon as you see it, it's like, well, I understand why you'd want to travel around this gorgeous country. Course. We're in Broome, Westralia, 1999, also on the screen. We meet one of our protagonists, Ben, a very handsome young man. He's buying a secondhand car, just a junker. Horror movie rule of 1 billion one, never buy a junker secondhand car to drive across Australia.
No, get like lease a new Civic, like
wrench, do go to Enterprise, like, throw some money on it.
Have some.
Yeah. The car salesman's like, oh, you're traveling with two Sheilas then. That'll be a bit of fun. I went Cockney with it. Sorry. Ben, to his credit, is often in situations with older men where they're trying to be like, so are you gonna fuck those gals? And he's like, I'd like to sign the paperwork, right? Which I appreciate Ben's. Yeah. He is clearly not interested in palling around with the guys. And, yes. And I do think
I like
this
that.
Is a good example of, like, I think I am empathetic to men who find themselves like constantly in the situation to have to be the one where it's like, yeah, I'm not gonna talk to you about fucking my friends. Even if we were fucking, it's not like we don't have to make it like a
communal discussion.
It's just, you know, not what buying a car is about sometimes, you know. But the car salesman tells them they get a real easy when they travel. I went Brooklyn with that. I'm sorry, guys. I'm gonna do my best. Ben says, okay, sure. He climbs into the car and he takes it to the mechanic to get it checked out. So at least, again, thoughtful and correct thing to do before you go on a road trip. And the salesman tells him, don't do anything I wouldn't do. That was nothing. All right. I'll just do my accent and you're just going to have to live with it, listener. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I find the Australian accent to be difficult because I hate it. Like, I always end up like, I'm like, don't you know? And it's like, that's not it. Like,
I just saw, I didn't, of course, read it, but I did see a headline about how there's people are like, you know, if you're scientists that live in Antarctica, is that slowly Antarctica is developing its own accent because there's all these people that come from different parts of the world and you all live there and you only talk to the same 100 people. I was like, of course, that makes total sense. Like, your accent starts to like blend with one another. So I thought that was cute.
I like that.
Over at the beach, we see the aforementioned Sheilas, Liz and Christy. They're writing postcards. We see them write a postcard to their mothers and slip them in the mail. And they also have taken photos they got developed of their trips so far. So again, just getting drunk, staying at hostels or staying at a hostel right now, just partying. And now we're going to introduce another element to the movie, which I'm like, this is all I need to ground me. And the characters are, Liz tells Christy, I think Ben likes you. And Christy says, no, I think you like Ben. Liz says, no, I don't think so. But more importantly, we're about to spend 3 weeks in a car with him. I won't be able to do it if I'm thinking like, oh, is he being weird today? It'll drive me balmy.
Yeah.
And Christy says, yeah, I get that. But obviously there is some intrigue between Liz and Ben. And Liz is saying like, I can't start fucking him. We're going to be in a car for 3 weeks. Obviously, that's exactly when you start fucking him. But we'll let Christy delude herself, or let both of them delude themselves into thinking that won't happen. Christy asks, you know, he is cute. Do you think he really has a girlfriend in Sydney? And Liz is like, why would he lie about that if he's trying to hit? And Christy says, because he's a bloke. Ben then screeches up to the beach to pick them up, along with the groceries they bought for the trip. And he says, where's the booze? Liz says, we discussed it. We decided we're never drinking again. So we have to get up early tomorrow if we want to get to Wolf Creek National Park by sundown tomorrow. And Ben said, absolutely. Okay. That's totally fine. We'll all be in bed by 9:30. Cut to them partying with all the young people at their hostel. And they have a full-on like sheet cake with a little loaded-up station wagon on top that says Happy Travels. And everyone is getting shit-faced. Everyone's taking shots. Everyone's flirting. You know, this guy, Patrick, trying to talk to Liz. And he kisses her hand, and Liz jerks her hand back, and she says, I can pack a punch if I have to. Drunkenly, later, Ben leaps into the pool with his boogie board. People are taking off their clothes. Everyone is young and alive.
Fun.
For now.
Hot.
And he grabs Liz off the ledge of the pool and pulls her in. And obviously, Liz is loving it. There's a vibe. And she says to Christy, who also jumps in, I think it's past 9:30. Allison, in the morning, Christy wakes up to find herself in bed with Ben. But they are sleeping their respectful heterosexual way, which is foot to head. So I didn't take it that they fucked. It that wasn't the vibe. It's more like...
Yeah, it was just like, oh, we crashed here.
Yes. Now, they could...
I always think of the Seinfeld joke about that, where Elaine's like, no, we slept head to foot. Like, there's no funny business. And Jerry says, like, well, your genitals still line up.
Have you ever done that? Like, I feel like that's such a funny thing. Like, it's something that, like, until you speak it aloud, it's like, oh, you thought, oh, what are you doing?
Right. This is still... Yeah, that's literally how, like... Yeah, I've never... When I've, like, slept in a bed with someone, we're like, no funny business... It's just been normal, like, sleeping next to each other, but, like, back to back.
Yeah, I can't imagine sleeping with somebody's feet next to my face.
No, I can't wake up next to a foot.
Nah, I'm good.
I really can't. And I don't want somebody waking up next to mine.
She sort of pulls herself out from under his arm and tips to her room, and she starts to get ready today, gets her toothbrush. She does sort of mess up her bed sheets because she doesn't want Liz to be like, why did you sleep in your bed? Again, I don't think Christy and Ben are fucking, but why invite trouble, if you will? Meanwhile, Liz wakes up on the beach with two random guys and a woman who also passed out on the beach. That's how hard they partied. And it's dawn, and she looks out as the sun rises over the beautiful ocean, and she pulls off her shirt and she runs into the ocean in just her underwear, alive and young, for the last time, as it turns out. We see our trio pull themselves together and get in the car. They're all extremely hungover as they drive. We find out that we see their map, and they're taking the Great Northern Highway from Broome, and they're going to stop at Wolf Creek National Park, and their final destination is Carnes, which is basically like all the way on the other, on another coast, basically. a 3-week trip that they're going to make different stops, camping and like hostels along the way.
Hungover.
I just, like, as someone who doesn't really drink anymore, I'm like, the idea of having to drive for like 12 hours while hungover. As the sun starts to set, Ben is playing a guitar in the back seat as Liz drives, and Christy laughs long, and they like make up a silly song about how Ben's terrible at guitar. And it is like, again, like it's stunning. The landscape is gorgeous. They stop for the night at a campsite. There's other campers and stuff that are there. They put up their tent, and we see them. They build a fire, and now they're far enough away from the cities, this extremely clear, beautiful Milky Way, like stunning skies. And Ben tells the story he heard about this guy who was driving down the highway, just like they're driving down the highway in Australia. And he saw lights that looked like they were floating about 10 feet off the ground. And suddenly he heard a crack, like a jet zooming by, breaking the sound barrier. And the lights just took off into the sky, and his car stalled out in the middle of the road. And the man was left just staring at the stars in the middle of nowhere. And Christy says, you got something dripping off your lip. And he wipes his face. She's like, oh, sorry, it was bullshit. But Ben is introducing the idea that that aliens exist, or that is something that could exist out in the outback. In the morning, Christy just full-on drinks as soon as she gets up. So by the time they're ready to leave and packed up the tent and everything, Liz is sober, and Ben said, would you mind driving first? So Liz is driving. Christy is passed out in the back, and Ben also falls asleep in the passenger seat. And Liz sees a spray-painted sign. It's a big piece of sheet metal, and in white spray paint it says, Emo Creek, 35 kilometers, last fuel for 80 kilometers.
Ooh, also Emo Creek, a movie we should write.
Oh, fuck. Copyright ruined productions.
We're calling it.
And as soon as she sees the sheet metal, Allison, we hear a swell of terrifying horror movie music. And we see her turn down a dirt fucking road that, again, has a hand-painted sign that says Emu Creek. Again, they do it different in Australia. They do it different because there ain't no way.
No.
Are you seeing that?
No.
I'm sorry.
That is not it. I'd be like, okay, that's just telling me don't go over there.
Yeah, that it might as well say Emu Creek, 80 miles to have somebody wear your head as a hat. You know what I mean? Like, someone's going to tear your spine out of your back at Emu Creek. But they pull up to Emu Creek, which is literally basically just a gas station in a little tiny town in the middle of ass nowhere. Ben and Christy wake up and are like, where the fuck are we? But they do have gas, so at least they can refuel. Liz tosses Ben the keys as he goes to gas up the car. And Liz and Christy sort of wander away. So there's like a construction site, also vacant. We see Liz goes to the disgusting bathroom to freshen up. Ugh. And Ben takes out his camcorder and starts recording. He's like himself. He's like hamming it up. He's like, Captain's log. So far, no sign of intelligent life forms. Allison, a grinning man steps out from behind the car into frame.
No.
And Ben turns and it's like, oh, he says, what's your name? And the man says, Graham. It is Graham. They're with a big Graham old smile on his face. Graham. Graham stays grinning and he fills up the car for him, and then he fills up like an extra gas tank. So it's like, oh, good. Again, that's smart. Like, just to have it. Yeah. Like, something God happens. Like, everything is so far away in this right. part of the world.
Yes. And very this smart. Is like way before, and who knows even like today if like regular cell service yeah. is like reliable when you're exactly. that far from stuff.
Exactly. Right. No cells. No, we're not getting Wi-Fi out there. We don't have a hotspot.
Right. Can't drop a pin.
Yeah, Liz is still in the restroom, and Christy tells Ben, I think someone has a crush on you. And Ben said, oh, you mean Graham, the attendant? I think he's in love with me. And Christy says, no, I think it's mutual. Just don't go kicking her around. She's absolutely brilliant. How about this? How about you guys hold off? By the time we get to Carnes, you sort out whatever's going on with this so-called girlfriend of yours. And then we find a freakishly hot man for me. And then we'll all go crazy together. How about that? And she pauses so long before she says man that I was like, okay. But yeah, I think she's just saying this like,
you know.
Exactly. He's like, if you're going to fuck my friend, could you not do it in the worst way possible? Like, I'm not telling you not to fuck, but I'm saying like, maybe you place a phone call. Maybe you sort that out. And then finally, you know, then you guys could. I just don't want to see. Also, it's like, I don't want you guys to fuck and then break up within the 3 weeks that we're going to be traveling together. While we're
trapped in a car.
Exactly. Meanwhile, inside there's a little cantina, and we see three old Australian bastards, like Crocodile Dundee types, ogling Liz, who's trying to order at the bar. And one of them tells the other, might break that. Oh, hang on. Arnair, might break that in half real quick. I'm doing my best. I feel like I can normally do it better. This is a noise. That's not a noise. Really, that's a real noise. Accent. Might break that in half real quick. Christy slides in, and the guys, of course, love Christy. And both of them are stunningly beautiful women. I feel like Liz is a little sportier, like she has shorter hair. So, like, Christy comes in, they're like, oh, look at this, Shayla. And then Ben walks in, and the first ugly bastard who's missing his front tooth tells his friend, here comes yours, mate. You fucking wish, you bitch. Yeah. You fucking wish Ben would fuck you. The guys then call Ben over as the girls order, and he says, me and my friends are trying to ask your girlfriends if they'd be interested in a bit of a gangbang. And all three guys burst into laughter. And again, Ben, to his credit, is like, well, good on you, fuckhead. And he turns to leave, and the gangbang guy stands up and says, what did you say to me? It's like, oh, that guy lives in the middle of nowhere, has been waiting to beat up a tourist.
Yes. This is his whole world.
Exactly. Like, baiting people into fighting him because he has nothing else, including his teeth. And Ben says, that's a nice smile you got there. Graham, the attendant, fortunately, he's also behind the bar, says, Baza, don't be a dickhead. And the guy tells Ben, see you later, sweetheart. And Ben and the girls leave. Ben is obviously stewing about this, but the girls are like, forget about it. You did the right thing. Let's get the fuck out of here. And Ben says, I should have smashed him. Don't tie chi on his ass. And the girls all laugh because, like, that is not anything. Allison, as they drive on, they drive past a sign that says Wolf Creek National Park, 120 kilometers, or I guess 2 miles. I don't know the conversion. It starts to get windy and cold and gray, and they drive through like a sprinkling of rain. And Chrissy's like, oh, I hope if it starts raining, that kind of changes everything. Ben says, it is the start of the wet season here, and I bet it will get cold tonight. We just have to plan for it. Finally, Allison, they pull into the middle of the Devil's Nowhere, the Wolf Creek Crater. And he reads a sign. Ben says, it's a 3-hour hike, meaning 3 hours to the center and 3 hours back.
Can't you just look down?
I would do 3 hours to the top, look down, head on back. Like, or however long, an hour to the top, look down, get on back. Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
Also, again, it is rainy and it's starting to sprinkle, and they're not really dressed for it. Like, they don't have mud. They have like regular shoes on.
Yeah, that's not like hiking. Like,
yeah, we're not like gearing up like, oh, like we've thought about this. We have like hiking sticks. We have water packs. Right. Like, we're not, they're in casual hike mode, not 6 hours into a crater and back.
Yeah. Road. Yeah. This isn't like, let's take a walk and run yet. Like, it's
exactly. Yes. The sign also says no camping, hiking's allowed, no fire, no rubbish. So this is the hiking. And then there's another campsite they would have to like drive to. But they bring the food and the booze, and they bring a regular umbrella and then like a beach umbrella with them. Cause it's the only, again, they only have two umbrellas. One of them is a beach umbrella. They find an animal skull, I think a kangaroo, sitting on a fence post, and Ben grabs it and then like chases Liz around with his skull hands. And let me just say this. This is not a criticism of Australia. This is not like a beautiful hike.
Yeah.
This is like you're scrambling up broken rock. It's very beautiful once you look over. I think it's like stunning. But a lot of it's like shambling up wet rocks in your sneakers.
No, that's not anything.
Allison, we see them from a distance and then we peer into their car like we're the fourth party. Like we're the POV of someone who is monitoring them.
I don't love it.
They make it to the top. We look at the crater and Ben tells them it's one of the biggest meteorite craters in the world. The meteorite would have been like 200 nuclear bombs going off. Some guys discovered it in 1947. Imagine being the first person to see
it. That was my thought.
It wasn't discovered right. in 1947.
Yes.
Like a white person saw it. A white person worked for an oil company, which I know we have traditionally said is the yes. only kind of person. There are Aboriginal yes. people who have lived here, lived in this place. Surely some of them see that.
But imagine being the first person to come across and be like, hey guys,
what's this giant hole in the ground? Yes, apparently the Aboriginal name for it is Condinmalal, and it is part of a mythology about the formation of Australia, and also I guess these guys saw it in 1947. So again, it is gorgeous, something worth seeing, sure. not worth seeing in the middle of when it starts raining and you're scrambling around hungover.
You're alone-ish.
Allison, they start climbing down into the crater. It begins to rain. They stop and sort of put up their beach umbrella and smoke a joint and eat some food. And Chrissy says, Ben, thank you. This is really great. Liz is antsy and she grabs her bag and says, I'm going to be back soon. And she sort of like goes up onto a rock cliff just to like look over and have a moment alone. And Chrissy asks Ben,
I wonder why the meteor hit here, in this place, nowhere else.
Maybe it was drawn to something in the earth. Like when lightning strikes.
Hmm. Or not. I need these people to be cut up by a chainsaw, Allison. This is like, we're getting a little far into the movie for me, for my taste.
Time for some violence.
Ben ends up climbing up to join Liz, and the rain lets up, and it is beautiful. And of course, he leans over and they kiss. And they start making out, and they keep stopping to laugh. And she says, oh, I've been wondering what that's like. And it was very cute when Ben puts his head on her shoulder and he smiles. And I'm like, that's all I need, horror movie directors. I just need that. And now I'm invested in them, in their story. And I'm going to feel even worse when they are decapitated. Allison, they finally make it back to the bar. And they realize both Chrissy and Ben, who have wristwatches, their watches have both stopped. They said, well, that's odd.
But
they're not really bothered by it because they want to head out. Liz is like, but why would that happen? Is it like a battery thing? Is it being near the crater? Allison, it's getting colder and colder out and raining again. But Ben reassures her, we have a whole hour before dark, plenty of time to get to the campsite. Allison, when they go to start the car, it will not start. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, you wouldn't catch me in this scenario
So
that's ultimately. Like, it's like so hard to get there because I'm like, I would never have done all of the things you've done to get to this place. I mean, I guess like I would get in the car.
You got to. I mean,
like at least like get in, lock the doors, be inside something and start like figuring out like I mean what like there's nothing around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would check the gas and see like, oh, do we need to use some of that gas? I don't know, like I don't know enough about cars to like figure out what to do to the car.
Right.
I guess I would just die there.
Yeah, almost certainly. I will say now that I'm friends with more lesbians, if I were to take this trip, I'd be taking this most likely with my friends Erica, Madeline, and Chelsea. And Madeline is, and I don't necessarily want to traffic in stereotypes, but the most butch of us, she would have a plan. Like this would happen, and she'd be like, "Don't worry, I have a satellite phone. Don't worry, I've made she would have already thought about this. And these are not, they don't have a Madeline, or as we call her, Dadeline.
Yeah.
So I feel bad for them. I would not be in the situation with three other me's. Does that make sense?
100%. Like, if I'm putting together a group to be like, let's go do something that, you know, bad stuff could happen, like there are risks involved, I wouldn't be like, all right, let's get me, Hallie, Riz the cat. Like, it would, like, no, let's find somebody who, like, knows anything about cars. Someone who's
been hiking. Got a little, someone yeah, who's gone who has, on a long road trip before. Absolutely. Yeah.
Somebody and who understands technology. Like, just somebody who knows anything.
Right. And I would say we have skills, but our skills are not survival skills.
I have soft skills, and I'm fine with that.
We would never put ourselves in this position. Allison, Ben pops the hood to take a look around, and he says, sure. Did you leave the lights on? Liz was driving. She's like, no. And she didn't. We know that she didn't. But he's thinking, oh, you know, is the battery run down?
Right.
Of course, as we've said, this is before cell phones. They're miles from anything or anyone. So he says, it looks like we're sleeping in the car tonight. Night falls, and Ben starts goofing around with a flashlight, shining it out the window, saying, Luke, I am your father. Ben stops and asks, do you think it means something? The watches and the car not working. You know, because I told you that story last night about UFOs, and Liz snaps and was like, Ben, I don't really think we need to be talking about that right now. Allison, suddenly they see lights shining out of the darkness back at them.
No.
Chrissy says,
I would be so scared.
Something's out there. And we see the light zooming at them. And Chrissy says, it might be a car. Ben says, it might not be a car. And the light continues to approach. Allison, what would you do then?
What would you do?
I mean, let it kill me. Like, what? Right. I have no survival skills in this context.
Let the aliens take him.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And also, like, there's no other options. Like, okay, get out and run into the outback at night.
Yeah, in the safest place it seems to be is inside the car. So I guess I'd keep being in the car.
Well, Allison, unfortunately, that is an unavoidable, really the only place you can be. And Allison, a big old truck pulls up and a man climbs out and asks, what are you mob doing out here? You scared the shit out of me. They all laugh. And the guy, whose name is Mick, pops her hood and starts rummaging around. And he is like again, Crocodile Dundee. He's got the hat. He's got a vest. Yeah. He's a man who lives in the outback, a white man who lives in the outback, seemingly alone. He says, I was about to chuck it and head home. Luckily for you, I didn't. He asks them where they're from. The girls are from England. Ben is from Sydney. And he says, oh, Sydney, the pufta capital of Australia. And we see Ben react. He's like, just kidding. I've never been. And Chrissy even says to them, like under her breath, like, he's like Crocodile Dundee or one of those guys from outback Australia. He tells him, your coil is shot. I have a stuff back in my place. I could tow you, fix it up, and have you back on the road in morning. Just let me know what you want to do. So he goes to put his tools back in his truck, and the trio sort of argue. None of them have cash. Again, a huge overstep for these guys.
What?
Because it's 1999. Yeah. None of them have cash. And Chrissy's afraid, like, what if he wants, like, hundreds of dollars to fix the car? What if he asks for $1,000? Like, we don't have money. We're going to go to this guy's house. Like, what if he's mad at us? How about he tows us to town and we just have somebody fix it in the morning? That way we could get cash. We could figure out something. But I don't know. Like, what does he expect? And Ben, they, of course, make Ben want to ask. And they said, sorry, it's a bloke thing. So he goes over to talk to Mick. And he's loading his toolbox into this long metal trunk in the back of his truck. And he says, I know it's a long way, but the girls are asking, is there any way you could just tow us to town? And then we'll get somebody to fix it there. And he says, I'm sorry, I'm heading south. Town is north. Happy to take you with me. But if not, I'll leave you here. And Ben says, okay, well, how much would it be to fix it? And Mick says, this ain't Pitt Street, mate. I'm not going to charge you for it, you stupid bastard. The trio's relieved. Oh, he's going to fix our car for free. We just have to go to this guy's house.
Yeah, that's
all.
And get
it fixed. No worries. And they get in the car as Mick attaches the tow line and they take off. So they're in the car and Mick is towing them.
Okay.
And as they drive, the horror movie music begins to play. Because all they can see is like the back of his truck, the taillights in the dead of night.
Yeah, pitch black.
Allison, all three of them doze off. And they only awaken when they turn onto like a smaller, rockier road. And they look out the window, but it's just pure black. And Liz says, remember their watches have stopped. Liz says, it feels like we've been driving for hours. Ben says, I'm sure we're close. And Chrissy replies, That's what you said an hour ago. Oh, yeah, I hate to hear it, Allison. Ben says, okay, great. Then we'll have him drop us off here then. Like, what are the other options? We have to dive out of the car? And it's true. They might as well be on the moon, right? Ben says, it's cool. He said it would be a bit of a drive, didn't he? Allison, what would you do now?
What would you do?
I mean, again, I'm at the whims of the nightmare machine that is taking me around the world. I just, there's nothing I can do.
Right. What do I expect from you, Allison? I expect you to
die.
They arrive at Mick's place, which unfortunately, Allison, does appear to be some sort of abandoned mine.
Of course it is. Huh, this man doesn't live in like a nice ranch style house with like skylights and an open kitchen.
Right. This is an apartment building with a pool table and the common room. Mick makes them a fire and offers them a drink. And he also has a big plastic cooler of water and says, help yourself. Nothing like rainwater for the top end. He tells them that this used to be a mining operation, that it was just abandoned, and he moved in because it's like perfectly good. He tells them the outback is full of places like this, parcels of land so big farmers would get lost and disappear on their own property, which really freaks them out. He tells them that he used to work on a farm that took 6 days to drive across. That's too big.
Nope.
No farm's too big.
That's not, yeah. What? How? Okay. Can you even call that a farm anymore? That's a state.
Yeah. A county. Yeah. Ben asks, so what did you do on the farm? Mick says, I was the head shooter. Clearing vermin, ruse, water buffalo. Now they use poisons instead of shooters. But before you'd fly over with a helicopter shooting water buffalo, the feral pigs were the worst. You had to get close to kill them. He describes killing these feral pigs. Instead of shooting them, you had to set the dogs on them and then stab them under a chin with a knife. I think that's how he may have enjoyed killing them. I have to imagine you could just kill a pig.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there are other ways.
He says, I saw a boar take a pit bull's head clean off. Its little leg's still pumping. Ben says, oh,
Jesus Christ.
Poor little fellow. And Ben asks, wait, so where do you actually, do you live here or where do you actually live? And he says, oh, I'm from all around. Ben says, wow, well, you must really love it, no, I guess, like being out in nature, you know, saying cool stuff like this is a knife. And they're sort of poking fun of him, but not really, but just sort of like, oh, you're like a cliche. You're Crocodile Dundee. We all know this guy in the outback. And we see Mick's face sort of like go still and he just stares at Ben blankly. And Ben says, well, so if you aren't a shooter now, what do you do like for work? And Mick says, I'd tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. Christiano Jackson says, well, you don't really shoot kangaroos, do you? He says, oh, I'm doing everyone a favor by killing a few roos. They're everywhere out here, just like the tourists. And they all laugh at that, Allison. They do a round. Christy burps, then Ben, then Mick. And Mick throws to Liz and says, your turn. But she doesn't have a burp on deck. Ben farts and laughs. And Mick says, there are women here. There's Sheila's here. And we see him look at Ben again and tells him, I'm going to go replace the coil. I'll let you know when I'm done. And he goes to fix the car, which is like within, you know, like sight, but it's like 25 feet away, right? Okay. Ben starts to, as soon as he walks away, he starts snickering about how like outback Mick is. And Liz says, you know, he's doing us a favor. How he shut up. He probably doesn't appreciate us cracking wise behind his back. Chrissy says, don't freak out. Everything's fine. Liz sort of goes over to Mick. And I think she's trying to be encouraging, but she sounds like she's making a demand. She says, thanks so much for helping. It really would be good for us to get going sooner rather than later. And he pauses and he says, no worries. And we see her return to the fire. Everyone's got their little sleeping bag.
No.
Chrissy's already asleep. And Liz lays down and tells Ben to move something away from the fire, but he's already passed out. And soon, so is she. Allison, Liz closes her eyes, and when she opens them again, it is morning. She's tied up in a shed, and when she leaps up, because she's gagged and her hands are tied, but she's able to like move in the shed.
Okay.
When she looks out the window, she sees the campfire, now extinguished, surrounded by their sleeping bags. No one is there, and Ben's sleeping bag appears to be soaked in blood. Now, Allison, what would you do now?
No.
What would you do?
Oh, I mean, again, let him kill me? What am I getting? Like, running away? Like, where? How? Like, it's just not.
It's just so hard.
I guess. Yeah. If there's any way to, like, try and free myself, if there's something sharp to try and, like, cut some ropes and kind of get free and maybe try and make a run for it, I guess he's gonna kill you either way. So, like, I guess it's worth trying. But, like, even if you could get free, like, where am I going? What am I doing? What am I gonna steal his car? I mean, maybe. I guess I would try for that, but I would fail miserably and he'd stab me in the head.
My thing ultimately is, like, if you get out, you're just running through the outback. You are running through the middle of nowhere to go. Then you would die of exposure or yeah. thirst. And again, I think I would take that over what this guy's plan is for them. Believe me. But like, either way, you're fucked.
Yeah, I think I would try and steal. Like, my first go would be like, what about the truck? What about the car? Like,
yeah,
try one of those before booking it out into the wilderness myself.
Allison, Liz is able to pull her gag off, but her wrists are bound together with a plastic zip tie. She tries to get the door open. It's obviously locked. Allison, she tries to get that door open all day for hours until night begins to fall again. She's, of course, screaming, you know, for help. Finally, she spots a shard of broken mirror on the ground, and she's able to start cutting through the plastic tie. She manages to open a window and crawl out, and now she is alone, shoeless, in like a jeans and a t-shirt in a muddy, cold, abandoned mining site.
No.
She makes a dash through the mud because, again, like, it's also muddy. She hides behind their like still broken car. The hood's up. Obviously, she's not going to be able to drive the car away.
Yeah.
And we see a tarp. Allison, the tarp is covered in tools and wires and just the worst shit imaginable for someone in that situation to see.
Yeah.
She runs over to the campfire looking for anything to use, sees Ben's bloody sleeping bag, and next to it, like a lined up row of bones. Uh-oh.
Bones? Where the fuck did the bones come from? Are those Ben's bones?
That's why I thought, I'm like, oh, it's his bones. No, they look like they have been placed there, presumably by Mick, for reasons that we will not have insight into why he's doing the things he's doing. Does that make sense? He's like a full Jeffrey Dahmer style, like,
maniac.
Bones. Yeah, like, he's keeping the body. He is a maniac. Okay. So we don't know why he would do this. We just see them placed there. They're cleaned.
We just know he's doing it.
Right, because I was like, oh, it's a spine. It's not a spine. It's like a lined up row of like rib bones and smaller like body bones that are just sort of discombobulated.
Are they like clearly human?
Yes. Yeah. They're like large human sized. I guess they could be kangaroo. Now I'm saying it, but bones with intent.
But they're human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz is able to find her shoes. Liz runs to the shed and we hear Liz being obviously tortured and presumably raped inside. She runs around the building and she's able to peer inside a little window. We hear a radio playing. And in this shed, Al said, there is everything you don't want to see. Knives, crossbows, dangling chains with meat hooks on the end.
Dangling chains, an underratedly scary object.
Oh, you hate to see them. Oh, Allison, because you're going to be dangling on that chain soon.
You're going to be dangling on that
chain. And unfortunately, she also sees Christy, her friend, tied to a post, pantsless, covered in blood. Like, nose bloody, obviously beaten. And she's begging Mick, please don't kill me. But I think that's a done deal. Yeah. Like, she is there to be killed, right? We see Mick load a gun, and he has all these, like, hunting rifles, obviously, because he was the head shooter at this farm. And he points it at Christy, and he yells, bang! He says, don't worry. Nothing happens when the bolt's open, see? And he's, like, showing her how the gun works.
I don't care how a gun works.
He shoots at her, but past her head, just to torture her, and laughs. He says, the look on your face... Christy, of course, is begging him, like, I won't tell anyone if you let me go, please. And he says, you know, I always use a rubber with you cunts. Don't know where you've been. Allison, he grabs his dick and he starts walking towards her. And unfortunately, Liz is sort of like rotating around the building. She's like going around looking in the different windows, seeing like, what is there an entryway? Yeah. Like, what could she do? Yeah. And Mick grabs Christy and bites her on the neck. She spits at him. And Mick says, you know how I know you're not going to tell anybody? Obviously, because she's not going to survive. Right. Liz is truly the anti-Allison and Hallie because she says, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to do it all. Allison, she grabs a bottle of alcohol and douses the back seat of their car in it and then throws a lit match in. That's so the car's smart. Now on fire. Yes. So she's like, I'm going to create a distraction. I'm going to, and if not, if nothing else, I can fuck up this guy's camp.
Yeah. Right.
She turns on, there's like a mechanics setup. Sure. So she turns on like an oxygen tank and she throws it on the fire. It explodes. And I appreciate the sentiment where it's like, even if I can't do anything, even if I end up dead, destroy your, you know, everything I can. Mick runs out with a gun and he sees this fire and he puts the gun down on the hood of another car. And he turns to look at the shed where Liz is tied up, obviously sees that the window is open now. Meanwhile, Liz runs around the back, runs into Christy's shed and starts to untie her, telling her, please be quiet, while Mick is out there dealing with the fire. Allison, she turns and sees hanging on the wall behind Christy a brutally dismembered woman's body. Her feet have been severed and it's headless. So just absolutely fucking torn apart and he kept it, right? Because it's not like completely rotted through. Right. So, right, we have to assume like this pretty is a pretty recent kill.
Ugh.
Allison, Mick stomps out the fire and he storms back in and he finds just Christy. Again, he doesn't know, hasn't seen Liz. Liz is now hiding under his work table. But he, of course, knows that she must be there. Mick says to Christy, now, where were we? And he pulls out a giant Bowie knife and says, let's play. I thought he was just going to fucking stab Christy, but he cuts her ties. And then he grabs her head and starts grinding her face into his crotch. And he says, you like to play, don't you? Nobody likes this, sir. No. Nobody likes this. This is just the smell of this place makes me want to fucking puke. Allison, Mick gestures towards the corpse hanging on the wall. And said she liked to play. We had a nice time. A great couple of months.
Oh, my God.
So we don't know where Ben is. But hypothetically, Mick is planning to keep Christy and Liz for months, Allison, to rape and torture them before dismembering them, apparently, and keeping them as his souvenir.
Oh,
right?
God. It's so much worse than I was, like, ready for.
I know. Because you're like, okay, this sucks.
Yeah,
this
guy's
going to kill them.
Who, like,
it's like,
stabbing
oh, he's
things
got a
or something.
Whole...
And it's like, well, I mean, I guess. But, like...
Exactly. Ugh. Not that that would be good, but it's like, months? Oh no, I'm going to be raped for months. And then he's going to take the head off my fucking body and keep me here. And he says, we were great together until she lost her head. Mick picks up Christy and like slams her against the post as she's sobbing and begging for life. And he says, you foreign cunts are all the same. Weak as piss. Allison, he hears a gun cock behind him. Christy starts laughing through her gag, like hysterical laughter, and he turns, of course, to see Liz holding a gun on him. And Liz screams at Mick to let Christy go. And Mick says,
now, Lizzie, you know, a rifle in the wrong hands can be, you know, really dangerous, so give it a fucking
Allison, she shoots him, grazing his neck, so unfortunately almost just like full on killed him, but at least rips a hole in the side of his neck. Blood is spraying out, and he collapses.
Okay.
Christy screams, kill him, but the rifle is empty. So Liz just starts beating Mick with it, with the butt of the gun.
Good.
He seems to be out cold, so she grabs Christy and takes off her gag, gets her jeans. Christy is like obviously having a breakdown. She's like barely able to function. She's sobbing. They stumble outdoors. They get into Mick's truck, of course. Liz is in final girl mode, right? So she is like unstoppable. But she goes and reaches to the ignition. His keys aren't there. Again, hashtag Australian things. Every time in a horror movie, people are surprised the keys aren't in the ignition. I was like, I've never lived in a world where people would keep them there.
Right? Yeah, especially like after like 1962. Yes. Like, I'm sure that was like there's no one's ever like, you know, where you keep your keys in your car. Like,
right, exactly.
Part of modern life.
Right. Yeah, absolutely absurd. She runs back into the shed. And I'm going to say this. This is, to me, a huge mistake. Mick is still passed out. You got a knife, Mick. You know that there's knives in there. You got to finish the job. You do not
cut his head off, whatever you need to do.
Stab him in the neck.
Make
stab
sure.
him in the eye. Stab it in the side of his head. Like, you just have to kill this guy. You cannot leave him unconscious. Allison, she grabs the keys off his belt and runs out to the car. She starts the truck, and as soon as the headlights come on, we see Mick finally standing up and grabbing a rifle.
Of course.
And he's able to get a shot off, shatters the car's windshield. Left with no option, Liz does the only thing she can think of, and she guns it, and she slams into the shed and, like, rips through the wall of the shed. And luckily, Mick does have to dive out of the way. The girls are able to back up and peel out and take off just across the outback, just, like, driving across the countryside.
God. But in case, they don't even know where they are.
No, exactly. But in case you thought they were getting out of this that easy, unfortunately, Christy turns to see lights approaching them from behind. And this scene with the car is genuinely scary. Like, they're both screaming. They're not in their seatbelts. It's completely dark. They're, like, driving into the void. And suddenly, Christy screams for Liz to stop. Liz slams on the brakes. Allison, they get out of the car. They are inches from the edge of a cliff. So they were about to plummet off a cliff just because they had no idea it was there.
Right.
Unfortunately, Allison, while they did successfully stop, they are now backed up against the cliff. And Mick is, of course, roaring towards them in one of his many other cars. Allison, who do you think will survive this movie?
Who will survive?
Was it Liz? Was Liz the one who woke up and was like, oh shit, where am I? And like has like saved. I think she's going to survive. She's like got some final girl energy and everyone else is going to die.
Yeah. Christy is the other woman. And then Ben, who we have not seen yet. So we don't know if those were his bones, if we're not sure where he's at this point.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that even if we see him again, he is not long for this world.
Yeah. He will be in rough shape. I will say that.
And I'm going to guess that Liz does kill Mick.
Okay, great. Allison, they decide to push the truck over the cliff. Their rationale is he'll see the headlights. He'll assume we're in the truck.
Oh, that'll at least buy us time.
I know. I was like, that's genius.
These movies make me feel so stupid.
Oh, we would have been kicked in the head by a kangaroo at the car dealership. Like this is a fantasy that we'd even be alive. It would be an observer that's alive at this point.
Yeah.
We would die if we drove past us on the highway, just like being in proximity. And so he does. They put it in neutral and they push his truck over the fucking cliff. And they hear Mick's car engine behind them. So there's also nowhere for them to hide. So they basically have to get down and hide flat against the cliff face. They have to like clamber down. Again, Chrissy's bleeding out of her nose, like beaten up. And when he does arrive, we see him standing at the cliff with his flashlight, like shining it down on the wreck. It's almost hitting them, but luckily, like they're flush against the rock.
Yeah.
And we see Liz put her fingers to her lips, telling Christy, you better shut the fuck up. No shit, Liz. Obviously, she knows that. Allison, he doesn't see them, and he proceeds to start to walk down along the cliff to the crash to check on it. They haul themselves up, but of course, Mick's not going to make the same mistake twice because Liz still has the key ring, but he didn't leave the keys to this specific car, you know what I mean? And he just supports, like, he has a bunch of cars, right? So
yeah, right. It's like he's probably got a ton of keys. If he's keeping bones, he's got a lot of keys.
Exactly. Liz luckily still has the energy. She has the pith and vinegar, and she says, did you see Ben? Is Ben back there? We have to get out of here. We have to make a plane. Christy collapses to the ground. She's like, her head's on the grass. She goes, he kept that woman in there for months. He's going to do that to us. It's like, once you see that, that's all you can talk about. Liz points out, like, I have his key ring. He must have more cars. I must have the key to some of his cars. And Christy knows what she's saying. She's like, I'm not going back there. Liz says, we need a car. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
which
you
is
can't
true.
Just, like, walk home.
Allison, in a mine somewhere, Ben wakes up still alive.
No.
Fortunately, they hadn't driven that far from the mining camp. But so they can walk back, but just taking a minute. And Christy is like hacking coffee. She's like not able to walk. So they get to the outskirts before they go into the camp. And Liz says, wait here, sort of in the trees. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, just walk out of here. Christy's sobbing. She says, but I am coming back. Liz promises her. And Christy says, well, what if he catches you? What if he catches me again? And Liz says he won't. And Liz runs into the camp. And again, this is beautifully shot. It's terrifying. We see Christy like completely alone. It's this very like claustrophobic shot of her panting. We're sort of over her shoulder, so she keeps looking around. It's tight on her, so you're just waiting for Mick to suddenly show up right behind her. Meanwhile, Liz is scrambling through this fuck-ass mine encampment, which is just full of like razor wire and mud and bone. Trying to find like whatever car. She makes it back. There's a huge garage full of cars. And of course we realize, right, because he has been doing this, like he has everyone's car, which like would be evidence if they ever found this. But I guess he's too busy kidnapping people and torturing and raping them. I don't really focus on the future. Not building much of a future, this Mick, I'll say.
Yeah, he's not planning long term, and it doesn't seem like he cares about that at all. But it's like, yeah, he's off in the middle of the, like, We know how good the police are here about solving disappearances and murders. I can't imagine in Australia they're like much better. So they're probably right. Just like, we didn't see him, so they're gone.
They must disappear to the outback. Allison, she finds Mick. She goes to Mick's like a workbench and finds all of these newspaper clippings he cut out about missing people. Young man goes missing. Entire family goes missing. No trace of missing couple. Obviously people that he has kidnapped. And she also sees again the headless and footless corpse when she looks into the workshop. And she luckily is able to find a revolver and loads it with bullets. Better than I could do, Liz. Good for you. And she sees, she runs on the shed and she sees the opening to the mine itself. And she goes and it's covered in sheet metal, but it's sort of like ajar. She's thinking, is Ben in there, right? I'm seeing the ajar door, just like my windows left ajar. She says she stands by her crushes. She's got a crush on this guy. She's going to try to get him out of the situation. She goes inside and there is a pit in the floor with a ladder down. And she hears a sudden sound and she drops her gun down in the pit. So Allison, she climbs down into the pit. It reminded me of Halle Berry in The Call.
Yes, 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 yes.
And she climbs down. She gets to the bottom of the pit. And you guessed it, Allison, there are dozens of dead, rotting corpses down there. But there's no Ben. So she says, fuck it. She runs back out to the surface. She goes to the garage full of cars. And we also see a room full of clothes and camping equipment. All the missing people stuff.
Yes.
She spots Ben's Swiss Army knife that he was carrying. And a camcorder, which she assumes is his. She grabs it and turns it on. Allison, it's not Ben's camcorder. It's a different family. We see a couple with a little girl who's running down the beach. They're obviously here on vacation. Christ. And then footage of their car being broken down. The wife is filming. Allison, their car is broken down at Wolf Creek National Park. Which means Mick has such a specific MO that his MO is disabling tourist cars at Wolf Creek National Park when they go to walk into the crater.
And then being like,
showing up hours later. Trouble. Right, when they're desperate. And taking them back to his place to slaughter. Which also means he killed a kid. Which is also, I mean, it's all horrible. But it's like, it's awful. Jesus. And like clockwork, we see in the footage Mick arrive with his truck to save the day. And then we cut to footage of the wife recording the back of Mick's truck as they're driving a suspiciously long way through the dark in the middle of nowhere. And her husband's trying to calm her down, saying, he's country people. They're friendly. You know, I'm sure it'll be fine. And they're around the campfire at the mining camp, pouring their daughter water from that same cooler of water. And he says the same thing.
Nothing like rainwater from the top end.
So obviously he put some sort of sedative, knocked them out with the water. Allison, Liz sees another camcorder, grabs that one. That is Ben. He's recording himself at the Amo Creek gas station. We see Graham, the attendant, step around the car, that whole interaction. And then parked behind him, we see Mick's truck. So Mick has been stalking them since... from Emu Creek. And of course, all the cars in these garage are the tourist cars hidden away. Allison, she's able to find one and tries all the keys. It starts. Finally, she is able to relax. Unfortunately, Allison, she hears laughter from the back seat. And as she turns, Mick, who has been sitting in the dark waiting for her as she fumbled with all the car keys, stabs her in the back with his Bowie knife. Liz is able to get out of the car. She's crawling across the floor, bleeding, crying. She pulls out Ben's pocket knife, but Mick just laughs. He pulls out the now bloody Bowie knife, and he says, like your friend said, this isn't a knife. This is a knife. and he swings the blade down, and the blade is so sharp it slices off Liz's fingers as she holds her hand overhead to protect herself.
I mean, obviously worse things have happened in this film, but that's so like,
it's vile. He says, "Sorry, Lizzie. I have to do something I learned in the Vietnam War. It kept those little buggers from escaping. Little buggers, meaning Vietnamese people.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
But you could still get the same information out of them. We called it making a head on a stick." Allison, he grabs her. He also punches her in her face and screams, "That's for wrecking my car." But Mick grabs Liz and he stabs her in the spine, paralyzing her. And he tells her, "That's what we call it, making a head on a stick. Because once your spine is severed, that's what you are." And he like drops her to the ground like a bag of potatoes. And he says, "Now let's talk about your little friend, Christy." Meanwhile, also terrifying, Christy is waiting in the woods. It's been longer than 5 minutes.
And yeah, Liz she's isn't coming not back. Coming back.
So she has to decide what to do, and she fucking runs. Like, which is what we always talk about. In that situation, you gotta book it. Don't just go back in. Mick is gonna kill you. Mick is, if you go in, you are deader than a doornail. Just run. Just take your chances with the kangaroos in the outback.
Yes.
She runs. Dawn is breaking. Luckily, there's a dense fog, because I was like, this is very flat. Other than, I mean, there's obviously mountains in the distance, but it's mostly flat, it's like a lot exposed. But luckily, there's a dense fog. It's the wet season, as we've discussed. But eventually, it burns off. And so now Christy's just running, covered in blood, through the outback. Finally, she finds a road, but it's, again, like a two-lane country highway in the middle of nowhere. She just picks a direction and just starts running. Because what else can you do? She also has no shoes, no water. Her watch is broken. She has nothing to help her guide what to do. It's at least overcast, so it's not blindingly hot like it has been in other areas. Right. She collapses to the road in despair, and when she looks up, she sees a car coming in the distance. And again, I'm thinking, is that Mick? But what can you do? She waves her arm. She runs into the road. The car stops, and it's a normal older man. And he's like, "Oh my God, what happened?" I think he just assumes it's a car accident or something like that, because she's covered in blood. She's sobbing. She can't even speak. And he says, "Well, let me get a blanket for you." He puts her in the back seat, and he goes to his trunk, and he starts pulling things out. He puts a thermos full of coffee on the hood of his car. And when he goes and reaches, he pulls a blanket and a water bottle out, and he goes to reach for the thermos, and we see there's a bullet hole in the side of it, and there's now coffee pouring out. And this poor bastard didn't stand a chance. He turns, and he is struck in the eye and killed by a bullet. Mick is hunting. I mean, hunting. We can't even see him, and he's picking this guy off.
Jesus.
Christy gets out. Of course, we see her in Mick's sights as he's watching her and finds the poor guy has been killed. Fortunately, he did leave his keys in the trunk, so at least she has access to a car. And she's able to get it started. Of course, it stalls out. Famously, all these cars are stalling out all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
And we see Mick's car pull onto the road. So she peels away, but Mick guns it, and now he's chasing her down this two-lane country highway. There is nothing. There is no one. It is just the wilderness. And Christy's screaming, "Come on, come on." And she looks in the rearview, and Mick waves at her. Sort of a finger heavy wave.
No, I hate him.
And we see a wide shot of Mick pulling alongside her, and he's laughing, and he's flicking his tongue at her. And she jerks the wheel and rams his car, and he skids off the road. So it's like, okay, great. Great move, Christy. What else can you do? Unfortunately, when he stops, he gets out and he takes out one of his long-range rifles and he shoots out her tire. And the car jerks to the side and flips over onto the shoulder. Christy is still alive inside, thank God, but the door is now crumpled shut. And she's obviously dazed because she's been tossed around in this car.
Yeah, I mean...
We see Mick drive up and pull over to the shoulder. And he watches as she gets out and starts crawling away. And there's a wide shot of her sort of crawling away from the car. And he shoots her in the back. And let me just say, I'm sorry. That's still better than getting raped and dismembered by this guy for months.
I was going to say, like, I'd be like, just shoot me. Like, shoot, like, just please just
take
kill
me home, country road. Okay. If those are the two options, go ahead and shoot me. He walks up to her and shoots her again, finishing the job. So Christy is now dead. He throws Christy's body in the trunk and he sets fire to the Good Samaritan's car, which then again is a question for the police of like, well, that's suspicious, right? That this guy was shot through the eye and his car burned. Yeah. Are you going to look into that? And the answer presumably would be no.
No.
Meanwhile, Allison, as we said, Ben came to earlier, but of course he passed out again. We see Ben come to again. He's in the mine. He's crucified to a cross through his, like, huge nails through his actual wrists, dangling, and he turns, and there's another crucified corpse next to him.
Of course.
And we see this guard dog snarling and barking at him, but he's inside of a cage. And I hate to say this because it doesn't matter at this point. That cage is too small for that dog. Mick is not a good dog owner on top of everything else.
Of course it is. No, of course he's not.
We see Ben has to slowly pull his arm free of the first nail. He's screaming the entire time. He gets one wrist loose and then he has to pull the other out. And he sort of slides down the crucifix. And now he has to run out of the mine barefoot in a panic. And he finds he's in the mining camp. He finds nothing. He's able to find some cloth to tie his wrist wounds, which are obviously dumping blood.
Okay.
And now all he can do, he just hauls ass into the underbrush. Because again, what other options does this poor bastard have? And he's screaming for help, crying, just like loose in the outback. And above him, Allison, we see a solar eclipse. And he collapses, screaming in despair. And we see the sunset. And Ben huddling in the grass, covered in his own blood from his bleeding wounds. And we see the moon start to rise and the kangaroos surveying his unconscious body. Suddenly, a figure appears standing over him. It's a German tourist and his wife because he's collapsed right near a road. And they say in German, "Oh my God, he's still alive. We have to get him help." And they're able to pick him up and they throw him in their Volkswagen bus. And they drive him to the nearest town, Calabari, population 450. And he is flown, he has to be flown out to an actual hospital. And we see footage of Ben in a suit being led into a courthouse. And text on the screen tells us, "Despite several major police searches, no trace of Liz Hunter or Christy Earle has ever been found. Early investigations into the case were hampered by confusion over the location of the crimes, a lack of physical evidence, and the alleged unreliability of the only witness. After 4 months in police custody, Ben Mitchell was later cleared of all suspicions. He currently lives in South Australia." And we end on a shot of Mick walking into the sunset with his hunting rifle and his Outback hat. And as he walks, he peers into the horizon. The end.
Oh, yeah. What a chilling ending.
It's terrifying. And I think that's also like why it is sort of, you know, it is a modern classic, I think, because it's not, it's willing to drop the hammer in a way that a lot of movies, I you know, you'd want to pull the punches or, because I assume when Christy got to the road, like we were at least going to get sort of a chainsaw massacre, you know, like a moment of her freedom and escape. Nah.
Yeah.
And we don't even get to see, like, last time we see Ben, he is passed out. Like, so we don't even see him. Like, it's not like, oh, well, thank God, at least one of us survived. And then the idea that, like, he was held for 4 months and blamed for this, like, so you think this guy crucified himself?
Right. How would you even?
Yeah, like that. It's like, that's insane. That makes no sense. But obviously,
do that.
But it's, again, like you said, with the cops, where it's like they did police investigation that were bungled. It's like, yeah.
Right.
And it is truly in the middle of nowhere. There are no landmarks. How would you possibly be able to lead them there?
And he didn't see so much more. Like, the girls saw a lot more stuff. And, like, he was really just, like, in the mine the whole time.
Exactly.
So he had no idea.
Yeah. Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think were made in the movie Wolf Creek?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, taking this kind of trip.
Number one. Yeah, number one. With a bullet,
like,
for
sure. And then, and then 1A, like, that's 1A, and being so unprepared for, like, obviously you can't do anything when there's, like, a Outback maniac stalking you at every turn planning your murder, but, like, to not have some kind of satellite phone and, like, some people that are checking it, like, you know, just, like, some protections for, like, what if things go wrong out there? Because it didn't seem like there was much, you know, precaution in that in that way. So, but I mean, once, like, what were they going to, I mean, Mick shows up and the car's not working. Like, what are they going to do? Not go with, like.
I mean, exactly. Like, I feel like even if you knew that it wasn't the right move, you would go, I think. Like,
you would.
I think you, and you would be so relieved that it would perhaps blind you to, you know, what you should be doing. I will say, to me, the biggest mistake, which I called out during the episode, is not stabbing Mick with a knife when you had the opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, that would be the big one of, like, just when you have the chance to kill him.
You just got to do it.
Kill him. I know it's like you're thinking about, like, I just have to get away. But it's like, well, you'll get away a lot easier if he's dead.
Exactly. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate that they didn't. Because then it's like, okay, that was the opportunity. That was the moment.
That was the moment.
And other than that, I mean, like, Liz and they, like, did the best she possibly could other than that. Like, I feel like people were trying. And that is just how the cookie crumbles down in Australia. And then finally, where would you place Wolf Creek on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
Ooh, I give this a 7. I think, like, it started out for me very just like, what was that movie that we did where they were, like, in the mangroves and, like on the boat?
Oh, God, yeah. What was that movie?
What was that? And, like, it was giving me that, which was also scary, but, like, kind of like, oh, no, like, this is bad. And it's like, okay, and there's, like, another guy there that's going to make things worse. But, like, this was, he wasn't just like, I'm going to kill you or, like, I'm going to kidnap. Like, what he was doing was so horrible.
Yeah.
And, like, the constant, like, almost getting white and then being like, yeah, this guy's going to get, like, he's been living out here doing this. Like, he is an ex. He's not just some, like, weirdo who's like, ooh, good opportunity. It's like, this is what he does. Like, you won't get away. I think for me, this is a 7.
Also, that movie that you referenced with the crocodiles in the mangrove swamp was 2007's Blackwater, which we have done and is genuinely terrifying.
Yes.
And I would say I think this movie is I think helpful for me because I believe that I've entered a new phase of not being anesthetized by horror, but rather like I am just analytically like looking at like the shot where you're with Christy waiting for Liz to come back. I'm like, what a great shot. Like,
yes,
it's so perfectly like you see nothing. You're feeling as claustrophobic as her, and it's so well put together. So I would say 7 in terms of how genuinely scary this movie is. 3 in terms of how scared I was, just because I feel like I'm just now like, what a great decision. I would say in terms of like, this was a genuinely scary movie that I no longer could experience as a scary movie, but that's fine. That's totally fine.
Yeah, that's all right.
But if I saw this in theaters, you know, a couple years ago, I think this would have scared the fucking shit out of me. And also like, again, just a great movie. If you're one of our horror movie listeners who can watch them, I think absolutely give this one a go.
Yeah.
I think it ends up on a lot of lists for a lot of reasons. Well, everyone, hope you enjoyed that. I loved watching this and loved telling you about it, Allison.
I mean, another banger.
And until next time, please keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky.
Bye.
Bye.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast, or join us at patreon.com/ruinpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content.
Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.